Your weekend begins in Crystal Palate's Wine Country with sommelier Crystal Cameron Shad. Every week, Crystal takes your palate on a journey from the vineyard to the glass and opens your mind to the endless choices that await your next sip. Uncork your passion starting now on your trip through Wine Country on Seaville 107.5 and 1260 WCHV.
Good morning, and thanks so much for tuning in. It's great to be back with you again on this lovely Saturday. I hope your weekend is off to a great start. On the program today, I thought it would be really great to kind of get back to the basics about wine and talk a little bit about the origin and the history of the grapevine. And I always think the closer we are to the process of anything, we really tend to appreciate it just a little bit more. Now, when I started my company, Crystal Palate, a few years ago, I really wanted to bring civility back one sip at a time, and wine is such a sensory experience. And when I think about some of the best times that I've had in my adult life have been centered around friends, family, breaking bread, sitting at the dinner table, enjoying a great glass of wine with great people and great conversation. And I really think, you know, we're not doing that as much as we should. And we're not taking the time for those really important conversations and just a little bit of R&R and just to really get to know one another a little bit better. And I think in the world in which we live right now, I think a little bit of that is much needed. One of my favorite authors, Ernest Hemingway, talked a lot about wine, wrote a lot about wine, I should say. And here's one of my favorite quotes that he had to say about wine. Wine is one of the most civilized things in the world. It offers a greater range for enjoyment and appreciation than possibly any other purely sensory thing. And American wine legend Robert Mondavi had this to say. If you go back to the Greeks and to the Romans, they talk about all three, wine, food, and art, as a way of enhancing life. And for Mondavi, he really felt that wine, food, and art are really the trifecta of a happy life. And I couldn't agree more. And so we're going to talk on today's program just a little bit about the origin and the history of wine from its Middle Eastern origins through Europe, through America. And I'll also provide you with some great sips and tips to hopefully make your wine experience just a little bit better next time, including how to what temperatures to properly serve your wine and proper storage after that bottle is opened, because I get asked those questions quite a bit. So when we look at the history, let's start there. When we look at the history of wine, archaeological evidence really suggests that the grapevine dates back millions of years ago. But for our purposes, we're going to look at that window of roughly 7 to 9,000 years ago. So there's a really kind of two schools of thought about when the first wine was actually produced. Some indicate that it was produced about 9,000 years ago in China with a mix of rice and honey. And other evidence suggests that it was really in the Middle Eastern region during the Neolithic era, about 7 to 8,000 years ago or say. And one of the probably best known fables about when wine first came on the scene in that area had to do with this King Jamshid in Persia. And he really loved his grapes, and he would take the grapes after fall and he would put them in jars and he would store them. That was his plan, to preserve them through the winter, like any other, if you think of any other, like canning tomatoes or anything like that, he was hoping to do the same thing with the grapes. But little did he know, because we didn't have technology and a lot of knowledge back there on the fermentation process, that as soon as those skins on those grapes start to split, the fermentation process begins. So after picking these grapes, he stored the jars in his cellar. And within, you know, a few days, a week, the time's not really known, he started hearing all of these, you know, hissing sounds and bubbling sounds, and he was convinced that it was cursed and it was poisonous. So he basically told everybody in his court, please don't drink this. It is off limits to everybody because it's poisonous. Well, there was a woman in his court that was pretty down on things and thought, well, hey, I'm going to drink this because I really don't like my life right now. And she had those kind of dark thoughts. So she drank this hissing drink. And little did she know, she became very happy. She became intoxicated on this beverage. And I can guarantee you it probably did not taste very good because it was primitive. But they realized at that time what they had created, which is wine. And of course, we've seen the we've seen the technology and the innovation really develop over the millennia since then. So that's kind of what we're looking at, is when the first origin of wine really started. And from there, it went to ancient Greece, and a lot of winemaking practices that we use today come from the ancient Greeks, from about 6,000 years ago. And from there, they spread it over to the ancient Romans. And the ancient Romans don't get credited enough with how much that they spread wine through Europe and beyond. And it was really the Catholic Church that kept the wine vine going, especially during the Dark Ages, because they kept making wine for sacramental purposes. And when you look at history and you study history over the centuries, you look at how pivotal a role the Catholic Church and the monks, and for religious purposes, that they really kept the grapevine alive. And when you look at America, it's interesting kind of how primitive, and how primitive is not the right word, but I can probably say that, you know, we're still in our infancy with wine when you look at the rest of the world. Even though Spanish missionaries brought over grapes back, brought over some vines back in the 1500s, the first wines were made of scuppernong down in Florida. But it was the late 1800s where we started really seeing a great interest in agriculture in California right after the Gold Rush. And things were kind of starting to get off the ground at that time. But Prohibition struck in 1920. And whatever was really developing with that fledgling scene really came to a grinding halt. And not to mention the Great Depression and wars. And all of that really kind of took a toll on the American wine scene. But in 1976, something really cool happened. And it's really this date, if you remember anything from this, this date is the date that really put American wine on the international map. And I'm talking about the Tasting of Paris in 1976. There's a wine merchant in London, Stephen Spurrier. He was very interested in showcasing some of these wines he was tasting out of California. And of course, the French at the time did not think very highly of American wines. They thought there were a bunch of farmers making wine, and they didn't give them a lot of credibility, if you will. So Stephen Spurrier, who is a merchant and also a wine critic, and he actually was in Virginia a couple of years ago speaking at the Virginia Wine Summit. So he really has a great influence in how the rest of the world views American wine. But in 1976, they put up a Chardonnay from Chateau Montelena against, it was a 1973 Chateau Montelena and a 1973 Stag's Leap Cabernet Sauvignon. So they put the California Cab against some of the finest Bordeaux, and they put the Chardonnay, the Chateau Montelena Chardonnay from the same region in California, from Napa, up against some of the best Burgundies, some of the best white Burgundies. And in this judgment, the Judgment of Paris, Tasting of Paris, the all-French panel of judges blind tasted these wines, and both the California Cab and the California Chardonnay came out on top as gold medal winners. So that was really the key pivotal turning point of American wine. And when you look at Virginia, in 1979, we only had 6 vineyards. Today, we have over 280 vineyards. And a lot of people forget about the fact that in 1619 in Jamestown, all of the male settlers were required to plant grapevines back then. And of course, Thomas Jefferson's a legacy in Virginia of trying for more than 30 years to grow grapevines at his estate by Monticello. And obviously, he's considered a great failure in the wine world, unfortunately, because he never produced a single drop of wine from all of his attempts at making wine. And we'll talk a little bit more about Jefferson in another program, because there's so much to talk about Thomas Jefferson. And we'll have Richard Leahy on the program sometime soon as well. He wrote a book, Beyond Jefferson's Vines. And if you have a chance, you may want to pick that up, because it really does chronicle the history of Virginia wine quite well. So getting back to the grapevine, or the wine, if you will, there are thousands and thousands of different varietals out there. Did you know that? Some estimates have about 10,000 different varietals. And of course, there are many that have duplicative names. When you think of Syrah, Shiraz, Pinot Gris, Pinot Grigio, they are the same grape, same DNA, but it depends on where they're coming from. Obviously in the Rhone Valley of France, we call it Syrah, and in Australia, they call it Shiraz. So that has to do with some of the names as well. But there's roughly about 10,000 2,000 varietals, and 95% of the wine we drink today comes from the Vitis vinifera species. Now, when you go to the grocery store, you know, a lot of the grapes we see at the grocery store, the Concord grapes, those are Vitis labrusca. So there's many different species, but thousands and thousands of varietals of grapes. But for our purposes, we're going to talk more about vinifera because 95% of what we drink today comes from that. And when I talk about vinifera, I'm talking about Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Cabernet Sauvignon, Sauvignon Blanc, Cabernet Franc, Petit Verdot, Merlot, Riesling. All of those grapes are considered vinifera species. From the vinifera species. And when it comes to the grape anatomy, when you look at the grape itself, tannins, you hear the word tannins a lot. Well, tannins are derived from the skins, the seeds, the stems, and oak aging. So tannins are this textural sensation. I like to always tell people to remember the letter T. When you think of texture, and if you've had a really full-bodied Cabernet Sauvignon or Merlot and a really young one, and you take a sip of it and you let it linger on your palate for just a minute, you can almost feel this kind of like velvety, sometimes even almost like the sandpaper type of texture on your palate. And it affects your tongue, it affects your teeth, and it's a very tactile sensation, and that's what a tannin is. But tannins act as a great preservative in wine, and they also give them some great structure. So tannins aren't a bad thing, but a lot of times, you know, a lot of those red wines do need to be aerated for a little bit to help open up those wines. So the skin, seeds, and stems are responsible for tannins, and then the pulp is responsible for the sugar and the acid in the wine. Now, as I mentioned, thousands of varietals out there. There are a few key white varietals. So with all of those varietals, we're looking at Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, and Riesling. Those three white grape varietals make up 90% of white wine production in the world. Chardonnay is one of the most planted grapes in the world. So that gives you an idea of where most of the white wine is coming from, those three grapes. Now, when it comes to black grape production worldwide, and red wine is produced from black grapes, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Pinot Noir, Syrah or Shiraz, tomato, tomato, however you want to say it, Sangiovese, and Tempranillo are the key red wine varietals in the world. And a lot of people ask me, you know, where does a wine get its flavors from? You know, when you look at tasting notes and you see Bing cherry or tobacco or black licorice. I often get asked by some of my, when I teach classes and things like that, they'll ask me, so are they putting cherries in that wine? Where does it come from? Well, there's no real easy answer because it comes from many different things. You know, when you eat a strawberry, you know what a strawberry is supposed to taste like, right? Same thing with blueberries, bananas. They all have a very specific taste. Well, every grape is its own varietal. They all have their own DNA. So the varietal characteristics are very important. So if you look at a Chardonnay, Chardonnay is a really, it's a beautiful grape filled with notes of typically apple and pear and citrus, a lot of lemon, sometimes tropical notes when it's grown in a warmer climate. But then we see so much malolactic fermentation or a lot of excessive oak aging, and that can really affect the flavor of the wine. But the grape itself has a very distinct varietal characteristic that can be altered based on where it's the fermentation process, where it's grown, otherwise known as terroir, climate, winemaking practices, and how old the wine is, the maturation of the wine and the age of the wine. All of those things play into what a wine tastes like. And another big thing, as I mentioned, is oak aging. And not only oak aging, but the type of oak that's being used. Is it French oak? Is it American oak? The level of toasting, the age and the size of the barrels. There's really a lot that goes into winemaking and getting those flavors into your glass. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of winemakers. I was down in the Eastern Shore of Virginia doing a little documentary on Chatham Vineyards. And the winemaker, John Wenner, had said, you know, we farm for flavors. We really want to get the flavors of the land in your glass. When it comes to oak, French oak tends to be a little bit more subtle. It tends to have baking spice notes. Think of cinnamon and nutmeg and clove and ginger. A lot of those notes come from oak aging, from French oak aging. And then American oak tends to be a little bit more aggressive, with notes of coconut, sawdust, and dill, and very vanillin. And that, there are certain wines that obviously do very well with that type of oak. And something to also keep in mind, oak oak barrels are very expensive, and French oak barrels are often twice as much, if not more, than American oak barrels. So all of those things also factor into the price that you pay for a glass or a bottle of wine, I should say. So another thing to think about when you start enjoying wine, and we see people swirl their glasses, and how many times have you been at a bar or at a restaurant, you look across and you always see one, there's always one person sitting across the bar in the tasting room, swirling their wine, looking at it in the light, and you're thinking to yourself, oh my gosh, I just want to enjoy my wine. Well, there is a reason why they do that, because your sense of smell is so critically important. Did you know that roughly 80 to 85% of what we taste, we smell first? It's absolutely the single most important aspect of tasting. Our sense of smell is directly linked to our memory, so it's such an important thing. And I've even had people say, they'll smell a wine and they'll be like, oh, I don't want to drink that. And I said, well, what's wrong with it? And they're like, well, it reminds me of my ex-boyfriend, or reminds me of, on a good thing, of my grandfather's pipe. So if you look at the different, you know, because it really does trigger memories, your sense of smell is such an important, integral part of wine tasting. So that's just a kind of a little bit about that process of, you know, a little bit of the origin, a little bit of the history, and a little bit of background on the amount of grape varietals that are out there. So there is so much wine to try. I always encourage you to drink outside the box and try some new things. After this short break, I'm going to give you a couple quick tips on how to preserve your wine after you open it in case you don't get through the whole bottle, and also proper serving temperatures. Stay with us. You're listening to Crystal Palates Wine Country on Seville 107.5 and 1260 WCHV.
100 years ago, Virginia's fish and wildlife numbers had plummeted. Then the Department of Game and Inland Fisheries was founded to bring them back. But we couldn't do it alone. License fees of hunters, anglers, boaters, and outdoor enthusiasts paid the bills. Today, our wildlife is here to stay. Thanks to you. Furnished by the Virginia Department of Game and Inland Fisheries, the Virginia Association of Broadcasters, in association with this station.
Virginia, more than a state, it's the place we call home. From the mountains to Main Street, sand and sea foam. When we travel within Virginia, we all come together, not just doing the things we love, but making them better. The future grows brighter for your family and mine, with every taste, every memory, and adventure we find. To keep loving Virginia, we must all do our part. Virginia.org is a great place to start. This message is furnished by the Virginia Tourism Corporation, this station, and the Virginia Association of Broadcasters.
Enjoy a next-level music experience at the Richmond Jazz Festival, presented by Altria, August 11th through the 14th at beautiful Maymont, featuring performances by Herbie Hancock, The Roots, Esperanza Spalding, Arrested Development, and many more. To purchase your tickets, download our mobile app, available for iOS and Android, or visit jazz@maymont.com. The Richmond Jazz Festival, presented by Altria, sponsored by Virginia Tourism Corporation and the Virginia Association of Broadcasters, in cooperation with this station.
Welcome back to the program. I want to pick up where we just left off, where I was talking a little bit about our sense of smell and how important that was in enjoying a great glass of wine. But I also wanted to talk about why we swirl our wine, which goes hand in hand with the aromas. So when you swirl your wine, or when you decant your wine, or aerate your wine, you want to do that to release all of those molecules, all of those esters in your wine. Essentially, when you take a bottle of wine and you open it up, keep in mind it's been tightly sealed, so you open that bottle of wine up and you pour it in your glass, there's essentially this war being waged between the oxygen in the air and then the sulfur in the wine. And so when you take a moment to just swirl your wine in your glass for, say, 15 to 20 seconds, and then smell your wine, try it today. If you're heading to a tasting room, I encourage you to try it, or if you're going to have a glass of wine later, pour the wine in your glass, smell it before you swirl it, and then swirl it for a good 15 to 20 seconds, and you'll start noticing how all of those flavors in the wine start lifting up toward your nose, and you can start really appreciating that wine a little bit more. Something to compare it to, when you think about rosemary, for example. When you smell rosemary, it's very fragrant, but then when you actually chop it or cut it, it becomes even more fragrant. Same thing is true when we swirl our wine, so it really is an important part of enjoying that experience. So some tips I wanted to leave you with today. One big thing, one of my pet peeves is wine temperature. And too often, wine is being served at the wrong temperature, specifically at some restaurants. Now, there are many restaurants that are really taking note and serving wine at the right temperature, but far too many serve white wine way too cold and red wine way too warm. So when it comes to sparkling, you want to be in that 43 to 50 degree category. Light whites, when you think of Pinot Grigio, Sauvignon Blanc, we're looking more 45 to 50 degrees. And then your medium to your fuller bodied whites are in that 50 to 55 degree category, because if it's too cold, it mutes the flavors. And when I talk about medium to full bodied, I'm looking at Chardonnay, Chardonnay, Viognier, those sorts of white wines. Too cold will mute the flavor of your wine. And too many times, if someone is trying to just kind of get the most out of a bottle at a restaurant, maybe have been open 2 or 3 or 4 days. And so when you serve it really cold, it really mutes those flavors. So I always ask for a sip of wine before I order a glass when I'm out to eat. When it comes to light-bodied reds, you're looking in the 55-degree category, and that's for your wines like Pinot Noir and Beaujolais. And then for your medium and your full-bodied reds, really should be in that 59 to 64 degree category. Now, I know that's a lot to keep in mind. I do have all this information on my website at crystalpalette.com, so I encourage you to go check that out. But one of the tips I like to use, especially when I'm entertaining, so is the 20-20 rule. So you want to take your white wine out of the refrigerator about 20 minutes before you serve it, and put your red wine in the refrigerator about 20 minutes before you serve that. That will essentially bring it to where it needs to be, especially if you don't have one of those dual gauge, dual thermostat wine coolers. So that's really important, because when you serve a glass of wine, especially red wine, too warm, so the white wine too cold meets the flavors, and on the other end of the spectrum, red wine, if it's served too warm, it actually exacerbates kind of the alcohol and the spice in the wine. How many times have you been out and maybe you've had a glass of red wine that was a little warm, it was hot, especially when we're talking about the warm summer months. When you have a glass of red wine and you feel like it burns your esophagus just a little bit, and you know you've had the wine before and it's really not a bad bottle of wine, well, chances are it could be served at the wrong temperature. So that's something you want to keep in mind. So just think of the 20-20 rule when it comes to serving wine, when it comes to the serving temperature of wine. And then another big question I get asked quite often is about proper storage techniques. So, you know, when you're storing wine to age, you want to keep it roughly in the 55 degree, a cool, dark place. And to go back a second about the red wine being served too warm, 72 degrees room temperature is simply way too warm for wine. When we think about room temperature, it really comes from a time when actual room temperature was 55 degrees, and that's modern day cellar temperature today. So when it comes to proper storage, you know, you're looking at 55 degrees, or if you have a dual range, a dual thermostat wine cooler, that's fine as well. But I often get asked most frequently, I love to have a glass of wine, maybe two glasses, but my husband, my wife, my roommate won't drink any wine, so I don't want it to go bad. So what do I do with that extra wine? Well, it's a really great question. So if you don't have a fancy preservation device, there are some on the market that will definitely extend the life a little bit longer, but some simple tips to try. I always recommend chilling wine before you open it, because when you think about heat oxidizes things, right? Heat makes things go bad quicker. So even if you have a bottle of red wine, chill it before you open it and then pour it in the glass and then put it back in the fridge if you want to preserve it, and cork it back right and put the cork back in it right away. When you want to always put it back in your refrigerator, regardless if it's white or red wine, even if it's for a day or two, because again, heat destroys things a lot quicker than cold. So it'll preserve your wine than leaving it out on your counter. So just take it out 20 minutes before you want to drink it, and it'll be a much better temperature for you. And then another couple tips for you. Once the wine is open, make sure to store it upright, not on its side, because there's more air surface when you lay it on its side, which will actually flatten out the wine a lot quicker. And some of the wines that can actually last for a couple of days tend to be your fuller bodied wines. Your white wines and like Pinot Noir, they tend to lose their flavors very quickly. So a couple of things to keep in mind. Again, I have a whole rundown of all of this on crystalpalette.com. I have a member service for $7.95 a month that chronicles all these wine 101 videos, perfect pairing ideas, and all of that. So I invite you to check that out at crystalpalette.com. So I hope that clears up some questions you may have had about just the origins of wine, some great little sips and tips that you can use to better your next experience, which maybe you're heading to a tasting room today. So try that out with swirling your wine. And if you're entertaining, try out the 20/20 rule. I look forward to talking with you next Saturday morning, same time, same place. Have a great weekend, everyone. Cheers.